Welcome to chapter 12 of setting up an e-commerce business. From business strategy of e-commerce, we now move towards the planning phase, which consists of first preparing a feasible business plan and operational plan, company registration, regulation, your taxation, and if you require, how do you get financing for your e-commerce venture. So first, let's look at preparing a feasible business plan for your e-commerce business or startup. So first, why do you need a business plan? First, to secure financing, right? If you go to an investor, or even if you go to a bank for debt financing, they need to understand what is your business plan. How do you expect to grow? What are the expected sales figures, your cost per year, and your expected profitability? And they want to then see the finer points to understand that how can you validate the financial projections that you've shared with them. So to get financing, be it equity or be it debt, you need to first have a business plan which you could show to the investors or the banks or even friends and family if you're asking funds from them. So first, to secure financing, then to avoid costly mistake, it helps you bring everything on a piece of paper where you can look at the numbers and then decide whether you are making the right move or the wrong move. And to set priorities, right? So maybe in the first year, your priority could be to get more customers, and hence you may want to spend more on customer acquisition. But as your business settles and you move towards the growth phase, you now want to focus more on customer retention and profitability. So your customer acquisition cost may go a little lower. You want to really tighten up your marketing budget and ensure that your business becomes profitable. So business plan helps you set your priorities. Then to establish business milestones. So where do you want to be in year one, at the end of year two, at the end of year three? So everyone knows the goals and the milestones, so it becomes easy to measure business success. And then to create alignment among stakeholders. So having a document ensures that everybody knows the right answers and everybody is on the same page working towards the same business goals and objectives. So what are the elements of a good business plan? First, you need to have a review of the market. It doesn't work without that. You need to know who are you going to sell to, and you need to know who are you competing with. So target market, customers, your marketing plan, your marketing strategy, both in terms of approach and both in terms of cost, and then your expected earnings, right? Your revenue per order, revenue per unit, and your overall profitability. So all these have to be a part of your e-commerce business plan. So let's look at the steps for preparing a business plan. First, an executive summary. This is a general summary, a couple of paragraphs, which talks about the business from an overview, that what do you want to do, where do you want to position your business, a brief mission, and a snapshot in a couple of lines about the current state and what do you expect to achieve in the short term and the long term. So just an overview, somebody reading the executive summary gets to know what this document is all about, the kind of business that you're planning to start. Then company description at a glance, right? The kind of products, category, customers, then a market analysis. So what's the current market dynamics? Who are your customers, the trends, the competition, any data which you may have. For example, if you are getting into a t-shirt e-commerce company, you want to show a trend of the number of custom printed t-shirts being sold on e-commerce websites in India over the last 3 years. So if the trend is encouraging, then it gives confidence to investors and stakeholders. Then you need to have an operational plan. If you want to sell to 10,000 customers per month, what's your operational plan to acquire and sell 10,000 customers per month? Then your organization and management, who is going to be a part of your team? What is in-house? What is outsourced? So if you're manufacturing, or if you are a warehousing e-commerce company, or if you're a marketplace, what resources do you need? Manpower and other resources. Then what products and services are you offering? So the categories, the subcategories, what is going to be your main product that you will promote to bring customers on your site or your app. Then your financial projections, your cost, your profitability, your average order value, your customer lifetime value, and then obviously the funding request. Once you've established all the other points, what or how much do you need in terms of an investment to be able to achieve your business goals? So this is mostly in an order of sequence when it comes to your financial or business plan for any company, but this is for an e-commerce business startup. So let's talk about the sales plan. Now the sales plan can be prepared for 5 years. Some do it for 3 years, but it's better that if you have a 5-year sales plan, because then you could show the different phases of growth, where first you may have a high cash burn, low profitability, but as the business settles down in the second year or third year, eventually it moves towards profitability. So a 5-year plan gives investors a clear view of what they can expect in terms of returns on investments over a 5-year period. So first you need to have the average selling price, which is the average order value per transaction. So this helps you understand that if you sell or if you scale up the number of units sold, what could be your overall revenue in each of the 5 years, which you then showcase or present to the investors or anybody interested in funding your business. So here is a snapshot of a 5-year sales plan. As you could see, you have the average sales price, you have the unit sales price, and that helps you calculate the revenue per day, per month, and your revenue per year. And this gives you a trend that how the business moves from a loss-making business in the first year and how it will move towards a profitable business in the first 5 years. So having this table brings clarity for the founders, or for the stakeholders, and for the investors. So a 5-year period is a good number, because beyond that, it's difficult to predict when you're starting off. You don't have a lot of data, but 5 year gives you a clear projection on how you want to turn around, how do you want to increase the volume of sales, and how will it impact your unit economy when it comes to your average sales price and your revenue and cost per unit. This is a graphical representation of the same data, how the sale in crores moves from year 1 to year 5. So it's a visual representation to express how the business plans to grow. This is not actual growth, this is a plan. So how the business plans to grow in the first 5 years. This table is a projection of the business plan with sales and profitability numbers over 5 years. So I would see how the average sales price and the unit volume increases through the first year to the 5 year. And you could see how the profitability changes from the first year, where the business is new and it's spending on customer acquisition, the number of units sold are less, the business makes a loss, and in the second year it achieves break even, and third year onwards the business starts to make profit, and the sales and profit increases as we reach year 5. This is the plan, but this gives everybody a clear picture if they want to be part of the company as an employee, as a founder, as an investor. The investor could look at it and could validate it based on external information on similar companies, on whether this is a good enough plan, and if they decide to invest, what will be a good returns that they could expect in 3 or 5 years. So it gives a ground rules for everybody, and everybody has some common goals to try and achieve and to measure the success of the business. So this is a graphical representation of the same data. You could have the sale and the profitability trend over 5 years. As you could see, the plan, and it's always the plan is always for a steady growth, but you need to keep adapting your operational strategies as and when you move towards achieving and executing the plan. But this actually gives you a clear vision that if everything works as per plan or close enough towards plan, what are the kind of returns and numbers that the business could deliver in the next 5 years. So now if you look at the above plan, the points that we discussed, in the first year of operation, due to investment and cost of factors, the income falls in negative trend. The business makes a loss. And in the second year, the business achieves a break even. So there's no profit and no loss, but that's an improvement compared to losses made in the first year. The business in the second year achieves a break even. This depends upon the category and the scale of the business, but it's good that in the second year, they've been able to cover up the losses and they've achieved break even. From third year, the profitability starts pouring in and the total margin earned is about 35%. The cost of operation reaches to the optimization level of 24% and hence profit earned is about 11%. Thereafter, till fifth year, the margin, cost of operation and net margin earned remain consistent and profitability increases to the new height as sales turnover increases to a new level. This is what was represented in the table and in the bar chart where you see a steady growth in sales and net profitability. So a business requires a roadmap that provides structure, direction and a plan to reach financial objectives. The business plan delivers the foundation required to build a strategy to reach a target audience and translate customer contacts into sales. If the plan doesn't look viable enough on paper, nobody is going to trust the business and nobody is going to fund the business. So the plan on paper needs to be strong, needs to have the validations necessary to ensure that the plan is robust and is accurate. It can't be 100% accurate, but is as accurate as it can be. And then the projections give the investors confidence whether they want to fund this business or not. So the elements of a business plan define the business's mission and goals, market, financial strategy, and competition. Everything put together affects the sales numbers and the profitability. So to conclude, your business plan should be a living document that evolves along with your business growth. You can't make a plan for 5 years and not revisit it after the first year because there will be deviation, there will be gaps, there will be new factors, maybe new competition, new regulations, new technology, and hence you'll have to adapt your business plan. It has to be a living document. Throughout your course of entrepreneurship, you're going to encounter new challenges, new opportunities, and hundreds of factors you never considered while starting off. Hence, it has to be a living document, keep revisiting it, and keep updating everyone involved. Maybe your break-even may happen sooner, not at the end of the second year. Maybe you start making profits from the second year itself, or maybe you make losses in the second year as well. So there may be deviations, there will be deviations. How big are those depends upon the actual scenario. So make it a living document and keep updating it. Because to survive, you're going to have to revise your answers to all the questions and update your business plan accordingly. Now we move on to the legal aspects of it, which is the company registration, the types of companies that you could start, and the taxation part, which is the GST, which is now applicable to e-commerce businesses as all businesses. So company registration means legally getting the right to do business, deciding the type of entity. Is it a sole proprietorship? Is it a partnership firm, an LLP, or a private limited, or a one-person company? What's the entity type? Registering that gives you legal right to do business in the country. So in India, registration of company is also known as formation of business or incorporation of company. So these are legal terms used, which means that you are legally registering a company as an entity that is allowed to do business and sell products or services. So what is a company? In simple words, a company is a mode of doing business. It's an entity allowed to do business. So a business organization that makes, buys, or sells goods or services in exchange for money is what you could term a company. So anybody who either makes, buys, or sells goods or services in exchange for money is known as a company, and there are different categories of the company, right? So there are different types of business which you could register. First is the private limited company. So this is actually recommended for startups and growth companies. So entity status is a corporate entity. You have an ease of funding. If you're registered as a private limited company, then there's an ease of funding. It's easier to get funding compared to you being a sole proprietorship or a partnership firm, because your legal entity is more solid, more reliable, because you follow certain guidelines as prescribed by the government, and you follow statutory compliances. There is high compliance, hence investors know it's not a fly-by-night operator and they can trust the founding team. Then you also could have the company registered as an LLP, which is a limited liability partnership. So this is recommended for professional firms or consulting services like law firms or chartered accountants or even strategy consulting companies. So this is also a corporate entity. Ease of funding is possible, lower than a private limited company, and the compliances are lower and easier, again, in comparison to a private limited company. Then you could register the company as an OPC or a one-person company. As the name suggests, it's a one-person company, a more formal entity for a sole proprietorship firm. So this is recommended for solo owners wanting to run a corporate business. So the status is a single-person corporate entity. Funding is difficult because it's just one person. Investors actually like to fund a team and not individual persons, not proprietorship companies. This is a corporate version of a sole proprietorship firm. So compliances are minimal. Then you have partnership firm, which is recommended for traditional businesses or for temporary. At times you may start as a partnership firm with a vision to transform it into a private limited company after a year or so. So the entity status is partner-based. Funding again is difficult because you don't have a lot of compliances. Compliances are minimal and it is not a corporate entity governed by strict government regulations. And finally, you could have a sole proprietorship, easier to start for a single person, recommended for small shops, traders, or small scale factories. It's an individual based organization. So funding is very, very difficult. You could get funds from friends or family or people that you know, but formal funding from venture capitals is just out of question. Even angel investors would not fund a sole proprietorship company because there are absolutely negligible compliances when it comes to this form of an entity. So you could either have a private limited company, an LLP, a one-person company, a partnership firm, or as an individual business owner, you could operate your business as a sole proprietorship firm. So first question that it may come to you is, why should you register the company? Now, registering the company gives you legal rights to operate a business. It puts the business in an advantageous position because first, it protects you from personal liability for business risks and losses. Your business becomes a separate entity. Hence, it protects you as an entrepreneur from personal liability. It creates a better image and credibility in the market. People know that they are dealing with a firm, a company which represents a group of people, not just one individual, and that you follow certain regulations and compliances. Hence, it's easier to trust you. It's easier to get bank credit and investment from investors. It creates faith in employees and hence is easy to attract talented manpower. And it is very convenient to exit or sell the business to other professional parties. Maybe after a couple of years, 3 years, you want to exit. And once you have a company, it's easier to sell it to the new buyers and make an exit as a founder or an entrepreneur. Now, who does company registration? So every company has its own legal body. In India, the registrar of companies, which is also known as the ROC, is responsible for registering companies like private limited, one-person companies, LLPs, public limited, and there are also a category of Section 8 companies in India. So ROC offices issue incorporation certificates, maintain register of companies and LLPs, provide list of companies, list of directors and company data, and payment for prescribed fee depending upon the type of entity that you choose to register. What are some pointers which you need to take care of while registering a company? First, for registering as private limited firm, there is no obligation that the venture must have sales or turnover. Even without actually selling goods to customers, without achieving any sales, you could still register your company as a private limited firm. There's no obligation that you need to provide actual sales proof to the ROC. Tax rates for private limited companies are not high as generally thought of. Provident fund, GST laws are similar for all types of businesses like sole proprietorship, partnership firms, and companies. So there is no difference when it comes to PF and GST laws, irrespective of the type of entity that you register. Now, there are threshold limits for the applicability of these laws. Like PF, a provident fund is applicable to all entities upon employing 20 or more employees. So even with less than 20 employees, you could opt for provident fund, but it becomes mandatory the moment you have 20 or more employees working for you. GST is applicable if your turnover is above 40 lakh per year. This means registering a private limited organization will not make any difference to the applicability of PF, GST, or ESIC. So it could be a sole proprietorship, but if you have 20 or more employees, you need to provide provident fund. If your turnover is 40 lakhs plus, you need to register for GST. There are other rules as well for GST. Now, minimum capital requirement was abolished since 2013 in India. So even if the private limited enterprise shows share capital of rupees 1 lakh at incorporation, that is allowed. Now, there are changes to the private limited entity after incorporation. Private limited venture is one of the most flexible business structures available for entrepreneurs. So here it's easier to directors to exit, a new director to join. So it's a legal entity that is trusted because the compliances are strict compared to other business entities. Hence, it's the most recommended type of business to register when you're starting a startup where you have plans to scale to a larger scale and larger business. So now office space requirement for a company is also there because you need to prove and provide office address proof. Now you can show your own residential or rented home address as the registered office address of the firm if you have the necessary permissions and documents. There is no renewal or registration or any fees to be paid to any government or private agency. The only requirement is that the company has to file annual returns with the income tax department and ROC and the GST as well. So there's no renewal fees, there's no third party agency involved. Companies do use third party brokers for ease of registering, but you could yourself go ahead and do that. All you need to do is file your annual returns with the income tax department, GST and ROC. Here is a quote from APJ Abdul Kalam when we discussed what is a startup. Now, the combination of entrepreneurship education in schools and colleges, the hassle-free flow of venture capital and evolution of good market will give momentum for the national growth when it comes to entrepreneurship and businesses. Now, startups is a buzzword. You start a new e-commerce company, it'll be termed as an e-commerce startup. But legally, what is a startup? So when can you call your business a startup? Now, a startup is a newly established business incorporated or registered in India. What differentiates it from other new businesses is that a startup offers a new product or service that is not being given elsewhere in the same way. So the keyword is innovation. You actually either launch a completely new product, new idea, or maybe a better way to serve customers for a product or service category. So there has to be some level of innovation in what you are doing with your business venture. So the business either develops a new product or service or redevelops a current product or service into something better. So you can't replicate a running business and call yourself a startup. People do, but that's not what a startup ideally is. There has to be an innovation in what you do, either a new category or redevelop an existing category into something better. Now, you can call a business a startup for a period of 7 years from the date of incorporation and registration, or up to 10 years in case of startups in the biotechnology sector. So in all of the sectors, a business would be termed a startup for up to 7 years from the date of incorporation or registration. For the biotech sector, the period is 10 years. The business either develops a new product or service, or it redevelops a current product or service into something better. So some level of innovation is involved. And the business should not have an annual turnover exceeding rupees 25 crore for any of the financial years. So for example, if you launch a startup and you achieve a turnover of say 26 crores in the second year, then you are no longer termed or eligible to be called a startup, because you've achieved a certain scale. Now you are in the category of regular businesses. So it's either up to 7 years or the first year when you hit an annual turnover of 25 crores. Now, working towards innovation, development or improvement of products or processes or services, or if it is a scalable business model with a high potential of employment generation or wealth creation. Scalability is an important parameter to give a business a startup tag, because most startups are tech-based and scalability is important. It's not as capital extensive as traditional businesses. So these are some characteristics of a startup. As per the guidelines in India, a business could be termed a startup for up to 7 years or until it hits an annual turnover of more than 25 crores. Now, an entity ceases to be a startup on completion of 7 years from the date of its incorporation. It's 10 years in case of a startups in a biotechnology sector, or if the turnover for any previous year exceeds 25 crore Indian rupees. So in these two cases, an entity ceases to be called a startup. Now, there's a government initiative called Startup India to facilitate startups across the country. So what is Startup India? Now, startups are becoming very popular in India. Now, if you would have heard, India startups have already seen more than 100 unicorns. Unicorns are companies valued at more than $1 billion. So Indian startup sector has already seen more than 100 unicorns, and the speed is gaining and increasing year on year. So startups are becoming very popular. It's easy to start a business, especially tech-based businesses. Funding is available. So in order to develop the Indian economy and attract talented entrepreneurs and startup founders, the government of India started and promoted Startup India Initiative to recognize, help, and promote startups. So let's come to the financing part, because when you make a business plan and you list down your projections, your value proposition, your team structure, finally you have the funding requirements. But how do you get funds for your startup venture? So there are different stages of startup funding. First, self-funding, right? At an idea stage or at an early stage, you pay out of your own pocket for the smaller expenses or for a smaller trial run. Then you have the seed capital, which is an investment made at the preliminary stage of the startup. It's either an angel funding, an angel investor, or maybe from friends and family, or even community funding from crowdfunding websites or sources. Then you have venture funding, which could be in series A, B, C, D, E, F, where you have venture capitalist firms infuse fund into your business. And then finally, it's the initial public offering, when the startup chooses to list on one of the stock exchanges. Now, when it comes to seed funding, as I said, there are angel investors. So these are individuals or small groups of angel investors who come together and fund a business. Then you have venture capital, You have private equity. So you have PE firms. They not only fund startups, they also fund traditional businesses. And then you have debt funding. So there, it's like a loan where you have to repay the debt funding over the period as agreed from the financer. So it could either be seed funding from angel investors or crowdfunding, or it's venture capital, or it's private equity, or it could be debt funding. Now, when it comes to angel investors, now angel investors typically like to get involved in smaller startup companies that may be having a difficult time getting financing from other sources. So they typically join companies at the initial stage, at the idea stage, which is pre-launch, or in the early stages of their launch. So here the ticket sizes are small, maybe 5 lakhs, 10 lakhs, up to 25 lakh rupees per investor. And they back innovative ideas or team of good founders that they know can execute the plan well. Now here are some of the top angel investors of India. So Anupam Mittal, the founder of Shaadi.com, Makan.com and Ola Cabs, he's funded these companies. Binny Bansal from Flipkart funded Unacademy.com, CureFit and Ola Cabs. Girish Mathrubhutam funded Freshworks.com, which just got listed in the USA. Then you have Anil Chandrasekharan, who funded as an angel investor Buttercups.com and Silversparrow.com. So there are angel investors, prominent ones, but there are too many. There are also groups of angel investors like Mumbai Angels, Delhi Angels, where people come together and invest as a group into startups at early stages. The next is venture capital. Now, venture capital normally comes in where the conventional sources of finances do not fit in. Venture capital funds are mutual funds that manage venture capital money. They don't invest in the early stages. They need to see some proof of concept and early success of a good idea. And these are generally high ticket funding compared to angel funding. And then you have private equity. Now, private equity consists of investors and funds that make investments directly into private companies, or they conduct buyouts of public companies that result in delisting of public equity. So if you are a private limited company, which is not listed yet, PE firms or private equity firms can invest into you, or if you are already a listed company, they can buy out the entire company, which would result in delisting of the equity from the stock exchange. So this is at a much higher ticket size, and it usually goes into well-established firms, either listed or not listed, but who have a good track record of performance, profitability, and have a good runway for growth in the coming few years as well. And finally, you have debt funding. Now, debt funding is an investment pool such as a mutual fund or exchange traded fund in which core holdings are fixed income instruments. So a debt fund may invest in short-term or long-term bonds or securitized products, money market instruments, or floating rate debt. The fee ratios on debt funds are lower on average than equity funds because the overall management costs are lower. But here, a founder does not share the equity with the financier. Here, it's more like a loan where they have to repay the debt funding as per the agreed timelines. So with the business plan finalization, all the action starts in your venture. This is when your business actually starts to shape up and move towards the execution stage as you put all the pieces together and get financing to start and scale up your business. Here is where the hammer meets the metal. Your business plan is a living document that evolves along with your business growth. You need to keep revisiting it every quarter or every year and make changes as per the actual execution and performance. Once the plan is in place, the first thing needs to be done is to register your company. So what entity you choose depends upon the category and the scale. No business plan makes sense if there is no finance. Hence, where to get funding from is an important question to answer. And it is important for the business owner to understand the means of funding. This is what a business plan is all about. We'll see you in the next chapter. Thank you.